The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened?
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, November 12th, 2025. I'm Bob Met.
And I'm Robert Vaughn.
And this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online.
Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right wing, it's just right.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
So how can the end be happy? How can the world go back to the way it was when so much bad happened? Well, that's the very question that Robert and our guest, Mark Vandermass, were asking about Canada. And their consensus was not a very positive one. Appearing on the show to discuss his personal escape from Canada, we'll learn more about Mark Vandermass and his reasons for leaving the country right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible.
Mark Vandermass is a retired member of the Canadian Armed Forces, having worn the Blue Beret for the United Nations in Egypt. He was a Canadian activist involved in exposing the race-based policing of the Ontario Provincial Police in Caledonia, Ontario, during which he was arrested for walking down a public street carrying a Canadian flag. He founded Israel Truth Week as a countermeasure to Al-Quds Day, and he founded the New Brunswick Freedom Project, unfortunately now defunct. Mark and his wife have since fled Canada for freer pastures, which they have found in Ecuador. Hello again, Mark. It's been at least a week since we last spoke.
Yes, and I'm so good to see you. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that our escape from Canada would not have been possible without you and your wife. So
it was
thank
glad
you.
To help. We were glad
and,
to help.
And you did very well. Thank you.
So, Mark, you and I know why you left. And this discussion is about two major things, I would suggest. And that was, like, why should Canadians be concerned about their nation and thinking about emigration as a viable way to protect their freedom? And two, what's it like in Ecuador compared to Canada? Because now that you have been taken out of the propaganda machine here, and put into a propaganda machine in Ecuador, at least you now have a very good understanding of what you left behind and what you've gone to. But first, let me just ask the question, why did you leave? What was the straw that broke your back?
The final straw was when Justin Trudeau started dehumanizing us and calling us racists and misogynists, not to be tolerated, followed by his announcement that he was going to stop people who refused the medical experimentation from leaving the country. And I, as you noted, I worked with Jewish people for many, many years, and including a Holocaust survivor, and I've been to Israel several times. And I'm very, very acquainted with modern Jewish history, as well as, even contemporary history in the Middle East. And once you've dehumanized somebody, a class of people, and taken their rights from them, because as you know, in New Brunswick, we were essentially stripped of our rights, and then locked them in the country, it's a very slippery slope from that to being put in camps and getting shot. Okay, I'm sorry, it just is. And 1 month after we left, the so-called conservative government of Blaine Higgs tried to deny food to unvaccinated people. Well, let me tell you, trying to deny food to people and putting them in camps and shooting them, that's a real slippery slope. And so that happened 1 month after we had left the country. So I think our fears were well justified. But in the run-up, you know I'm a fighter. And especially during the Caledonia stuff, our team won a Supreme Court of Canada decision in Fleming v. Ontario, 2019, that is now kind of being cited by Ezra Levant and some others. It involved the police, the Ontario Provincial Police, arresting innocent people like us to avoid provoking violent people, which were these Native militants in Caledonia. And the police thought they had the right to arrest us instead of the violent people. And we said, no, that's not going to happen. So I'm a fighter. I mean, I sent a detailed report to the government of New Brunswick. Every MLA got a written report, 75 pages, called Vaccine Hesitancy and the Risks of Medical Segregation Discrimination. Not one MP wanted to know more. So we left, but it was, so we were still fighting, and I was invited to speak to different groups in people's homes at outdoor events. People were getting so desperate. I mean, I had people come into my house because they knew my history as an activist, and that we had them come into our house. Oh my God, I've worked for the college for 23 years, and now they're going to fire me because I won't take this vax. Just tragic stories. I had students contacting me, not allowed to go visit their dying grandmother in Newfoundland, kicked out of school. I mean, it was just dreadful. And I was quite prepared to fight. But once Trudeau, the feds got involved and said, okay, you're a piece of scum, essentially, and we're going to lock you in. And we also have to remember, we like to blame the political parties, but let's be honest about it. Most Canadians supported what was done to us. They were quite happy to have us thrown out of society, and that was a very painful realization. But it was true to once he decided he was going to lock us in the country and keep us from traveling, I said, we got to get out of here, because we just didn't know where it was going to go. You just don't know. And of course, now we can look back and say, well, probably I think the truckers deserve a lot of credit for restoring some measure of freedom in Canada. But yeah, it was Trudeau's move. I said, and it's really, even today, I still get emotional about it. I go from being, a member of the Canadian Forces, a patriot, to being willing to fight within the courts for justice. And now I realize my country hates me. My country hates my gentle wife, who never hurt anybody in her whole life. And it hates me. And it's an awful feeling to know that. And
I was putting a blog post together about one of the reasons why I will be publicly announcing that I no longer support Canada as a nation. And part of my research, I went back to look up exactly what you were talking about and what percentage of Canada could be considered to be our enemies of freedom. And it turns out it's 78%. Because there was a poll done by Léger, October 2nd, 2021 was when it was published in the Globe and Mail, or Canada Press, and it says 78% Canadians support COVID-19 vaccine passports for public places. There you have it. 78% of our fellow countrymen would want to see something like that. And that is a slippery slope indeed.
And dead. I mean, I had people, Robert, in Moncton. We were at the bridge. We were doing a protest there. And I had normal looking people like you, like me, like anybody around us come to my face and say, I hope they keep you out of the hospital. I hope you die. And these were just ordinary Canadian, ordinary. And of course, the book Ordinary Men, right? Where the ordinary police officers, I think it was in Hungary, they were recruited gladly in to commit atrocities against the Jews. And so these were ordinary people. Deb had friends for 40 years who just wrote the disgusting email. And so we were just talking about that today, and we realized you don't really have as many friends as you think. You might have one or two friends. The rest of them are just acquaintances.
Fair weather friends.
Very fair weather friends, and you find out when the chips are down who really is a friend, and very few people have them. But I would go even further. Okay, remember we had an election in 2021 in November. Who won that election? Okay, there was one freedom party in the whole country who was against the abuses, the sadism that these provinces and feds were inflicting on human beings. There was only one party speaking out against it, and they got what? 3% in the polls. So 97% of Canadians, even to this day, still support the parties that were okay with destroying my life, your life, my wife's life, because we refused medical experimentation. Okay? And that shows you the dreadful power of controlling the media, first of all. I mean, that's a whole other issue. But really, for Canada, that was the last straw. That was okay. That was the point where I knew that, okay, this could get really, really bad. I don't know how bad it would get, but we got to get out of here and we got to think like refugees, not as immigrants. And I had this woman call me. While we were packing. Okay, my wife's bawling in the next room, and I'd never seen her cry hardly in 33 years of marriage. Okay, this is a strong woman. She's crying in the next room because she's got to sort through all of her things, as you know, because you were there. Precious, which we'll keep, important, which we might need if we come back, and abandoned. And as you know, we abandoned stuff in the house. We had to get out. We had 6 weeks to get out of the bloody country that we were born in.
So my question to you, Mark, is, are our problems solvable, or is it a fundamental institutional and cultural problem that is insurmountable, that cannot be overcome because it is institutionalized and it's cultural?
Well, I think you nailed it. When I started the New Brunswick Free Province Project, I still had some faith that, and the idea was to duplicate what the New Hampshire Free State Project was doing, is encourage people to move to New Brunswick and gradually take over the politics and force conservatives to be conservative. So I still believed in that. I mean, I think I started, I don't know, 2020. And then once COVID started and the response to it, I realized that Canada was utterly lawless, first of all. And I'm not afraid to fight. I've been to jail five times, arrested five times in Caledonia. But once your country collectively has decided that you are trash and you are an enemy of society for refusing medical experimentation, and they threw away the charter, they threw away the Nuremberg Code, which was all about bodily autonomy. They threw away the UN Declaration on bioethics and human rights. They threw away everything in the charter that we thought we believed in was now gone, whether it was mobility rights, the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. Well, those are gone now. Free speech is now gone. And so I realized that no, we got to get out of here because we just don't know how bad it is. And some people supposedly on our side, oh, you're a coward, you ran away. Well, I'm telling you something. The British evacuate out of Dunkirk to live to fight another day. The Jews that got out of Germany lived. The people who got out of East Germany lived in freedom instead of totalitarianism. And so there's nothing wrong with finding a place that treats you better, first of all. But can Canada be saved? And I've said this over and over again, even long before this last election. No, I don't believe it can be. And a lot of people, most Canadians, have put their faith in political saviors. Pierre Poilievre is going to save us. Oh, he's going to save us. Well, you and I both know what the conservative record is. He's almost as woke as Justin Trudeau. And I don't care what he says. You and I know. It's what you do, not what you say. Okay. He supports all the climate crap, but he wants to use technology to reduce life-giving CO2. He voted for the gender wang stuff that criminalized helping stuff. He supported, he well, he was silent at least, and his party was silent while we were crying for somebody somewhere to give us a voice. And that I will never forgive the Conservative Party for, because they haven't apologized for it yet. And so I knew Pierre Poilievre was never going to save Canada. At best, he would be better than, and this is what Canadian politics seems to be about. Yeah, but at least he's better than this other guy. Well, that's not good enough. I want freedom. I want truth. I want justice. And if you can't have that, I might as well not have that in Ecuador, where I don't have to worry about freezing to death because we have no snow, no humidity, no mosquitoes, and the food's cheap. Okay, if I got to have a little bit of corruption in my life, I'd rather have it where I'm not freezing to death, right? And so my tongue's in my cheek a little bit there. Why can't it be fixed? Even if Poilievre wins, you have to assume that he wants to fix it. I'm not convinced he does. I think he wants to get elected. There's no doubt in my mind that he wants to get elected, but I'm not sure he wants to fix it. And even if he does, how are you going to do that? And so for me, everything revolves around the COVID crisis, in that Canada discarded the entire rule of law over, I don't know what. Look, everybody has theories about what was going on, but it certainly seems sadistic to me what they were doing to us. And I realized what these people did was completely shred the fabric of Canadian society when they destroyed countless lives for refusing medical experimentation.
Remember, Canada switched off the truckers' accounts, froze their bank accounts. Well, there's a bill that's come in called Bill C-8 about cybersecurity, and things are about to get a whole lot worse. Now, this next clip, watch it. You need your attention on this.
On to the present bill. I am concerned, as I say, by the following sections. 15.1 and 15.2 give the minister the unprecedented, incredible power to kick any private Canadian citizen off the internet, to cut off their phone line, to turn off their cell phone. That is the plain language summary, but I will quote now the bill in its legalese. If there is reasonable grounds to believe that it is necessary to do so to secure the Canadian telecommunication system against any threat, the minister may prohibit a telecommunication service provider from providing any service to the specified person. And as far as I can tell, given the Liberals' incautious and bombastic use of terms like misinformation, that being any information they don't like, or existential threat. For instance, the member from Milton called the leader of my party an existential threat to our democracy, which is, of course, bananas. So given their incautious and bombastic use of these phrases, it seems to me that the industry minister could deem any speech she doesn't like any threat, and then kick that person off the internet. This section reaches Chinese Communist Party levels of government overreach, and they should be ashamed of themselves. The bill gets worse, it does not get better, Mr. Speaker. 15.2, Clause 5, gives the minister the ability to make her decision to kick someone off the internet. Secret. So imagine that. You've annoyed the Liberal Party overlords, and they've decided to kick you off the internet and cut your phone line. You can't tell anyone that you've been cut off. I have no idea how this could even possibly be enforced. But imagine being put effectively in a digital gulag, unable to use the phone, or the internet, or your online banking, and if you tell anyone that this happened, you could go to physical jail. I do not doubt that the Liberals will stand and say that I'm being somehow outlandish in my interpretation of this. I am not. It is there in black and white. Let me quote it for them. It seems like they haven't read it. 15.2, Clause 5. An order made under subsection 1 or 2 may include a provision prohibiting the disclosure of its existence or some or all of its contents by any person. And if you aren't inclined to believe me, please just Google it.
See, there's been a number of us, certainly post-2020, who have been warning about such things. And of course, these things only tend to get attention when they actually happen, when it actually starts to happen. But in this instance, you may not hear much about it. Why? Because people are going to be switched off, potentially, allegedly switched off, and won't even be able to communicate that has happened. That's how deep-rooted that this can go. And this, of course, is related to Canada, but people who are warning you about these sort of things, will also tell you that this is coming pretty much everywhere. Everywhere that there's talk of things like the digital IDs, like here in the UK, it's coming in regards to a level of censorship for so many countries, a level of censorship that's never been seen before.
We love our life in Ecuador. Don't get me wrong. Love it. Love it. I should be sending thank you cards to Justin Trudeau for forcing us to leave Canada to live here where we have this fabulous life. We live in a one-bedroom cottage inside in a garden right beside the Tomabamba River, and we have different groups of friends or acquaintances, and we love our life here. We really do. However, that wasn't his choice to make. It really wasn't. So the fabric of society, of Canadian society, was destroyed through the entire COVID debacle, and no one is sorry. So I'm a Christian, as you know. I am required to forgive people who have repented. So even Justin Trudeau, as much as I like to get my hands around his throat, even if he came out and said, you know what I did was wrong, what we as a party did was wrong, I would have to forgive him. But yet, here you destroyed all of these lives over nothing, and nobody's sorry, Robert. No one in authority is sorry. And that tells me you are not, that alone is enough, that collapse of the rule of law, of these sacred principles of bodily autonomy and all this magnificent charter that was going to protect all our rights. It's the charter of imaginary rights. It is less useful than a piece of used toilet paper. I'm sorry, it's unenforceable. If you're a pedophile with child kiddie porn on it and vicious stuff, the Supreme Court will hear your case and they'll let you off the hook. If you want to kill a bunch of ostriches who are completely healthy, Supreme Court, yeah, kill them all. Kill all the birds. If you're Sheila Lewis dying because you can't get a lung transplant because you refused a drug for a disease that you were already had immunity to, Supreme Court doesn't want to hear that, okay? I come from, in 2019, our team, and I'm generous when I say our, it was a member of our team who won this case at the Supreme Court of Ontario of Canada 9-0 that said police can't arrest innocent people. So I believed in the charter. I no longer believe in it. I believed in the courts. And so who's going to fix it? Now we transition after destroying all of the informed consent and on the Charter of Rights. Now we transition to a phase. October 7th happens. All of a sudden, the people who I admired, for some of them, and you would know their names if I said them, who I admired and looked up to for standing up against the COVID excesses, are all of a sudden, like October 8th, they're defending Hamas. And these people were bringing in Gazans. 80% of them, at least, support what Hamas did. We're bringing them into Canada. We already had enough Muslims. Jews are being terrorized. If I told you, the people I know, the Jews I know in Canada, they're terrified of what's going on. And one shul or synagogue, it's been attacked 10 times. Now, does the government of Canada condemn all this stuff and take action to stop it? I don't know what the real number is, Robert. Maybe you do. How many churches have been attacked in Canada? We used to think it was like 100. Somebody was using the number 500. I don't know what the real number is, but it's over 100. Nobody cares about that. So we went from hating the society, hating the unvaccinated, now hating the Jewish people, and our government, again, is at the forefront by recognizing these monsters who were raping and torturing and kidnapping and slaughtering Jews, even while their own hostages are sitting underground. Our country did that despicable thing of giving those people, those monsters, hope that they were going to win this propaganda war, which they have. They won the propaganda war. And so now it's the Americans. We all got to hate the Americans. Yeah, because of Donald Trump. And not the 15 years or whatever the heck it's been, the years of Trudeau. No, no, we should... No, he had Trudeau and the Liberal Party didn't do anything wrong. It was all Donald Trump in 6 months. He's destroyed Canada. We got to hate him. Okay. And now we're getting, okay. So it's like a national pastime. I realized that Canadians' national pastime is hating people. Now it's the boomers. Oh, now I'm seeing, you know, I used to go out to all these rallies. I mean, I went to a bunch of them. And I'd see a lot of boomers there. We were all fighting the COVID abuses. Now I got to listen to these same freedom-loving people. Oh, it's the boomers that are screwing Canada. Well, I'm sorry, but there's a lot of other groups, age groups that were involved in voting left-wing. And now we reach a point where we've wanted reconciliation. The idea of apparently Canadian reconciliation with Native people is the Native people get all our land and all our homes. And I guess now, Robert, I just find out TD Bank is giving no fee accounts for if you identify as an Indian. So now what we're reaching a point where we have master races of Indians, we got the Muslims, and people like me and you and my wife, we're expendable. So all this to say, no, you're not coming back from this. It's just not. That's a very long-winded way, rant, to explain why Canada is done. Done like dinner. And the only hope people have, either get out, and this isn't something I came up with today. I've been saying this for 4 years now. Either get out or get to Alberta and hope that, number one, you get independence. There actually is a vote, because I'm not sure they have the votes. And number two, that the new constitution is the one proposed by Bruce Pardee, the Queen's University lawyer, constitutional lawyer, because he recognizes the terrible damage that this idea of Indian blood rights has done to the country. I mean, it's just ripping the country apart. You're going to have, you know, sorry, I'm ranting, but I think you're going to have, if the Cowichan decision is upheld, I think you're going to have countrywide panic in vast swaths like New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, all unceded land, all of BC. I'm sure there are parts of Ontario, but I'm not sure. And you're going to see absolute panic. And so it's for me, the COVID thing cemented the idea in my head that Canada was over because nobody's going to apologize. And the fabric of society is so badly shredded now. And you and I have talked about this, how I've gone from a patriotic, willing to go to jail to defend my country's charter and constitution, willing to take a bullet for my country, to the point now where I wouldn't risk a hangnail for Canada. The sooner Canada is over, the sooner maybe you can build something better. But that's how I do. And do you know, I mean, you know, you served in the reserves. Do you know how hard it is to take a veteran of Canada and a patriot and turn them so firmly and radicalize them against their own country? I don't call Canada my country. It's not my country. I use quotes around it. That's not the country I offered to serve. I just don't. So, no, is it fixable? No, it's not fixable. It doesn't matter who comes to power. The only way it gets, Canada's going to collapse sooner or later. And second of all, the only hope is Alberta. The problem is, in Alberta, we're getting maybe a little off topic, but I like to deal in hope as well. Okay, I want to offer somebody a solution. The solution we have, we got out. If you don't want to get out, then get to an unceded area of Alberta and pray and work for independence, and then pray that the Alberta Prosperity Project's constitutional vision does not happen, because they want to recognize, they want to enshrine Indian blood rights in the new constitution, and they want to give them 1.6 million more hectares of land, right in their vision for values or freedom. I can't remember what the title is. It's right on their website. And so Those are your options now. I'm sorry, Canada's not coming back. Or you get to learn to live with communism.
I would agree with you. It is unfixable. It is fundamentally flawed by its institutions. The Canadian Parliament in this country is supreme, the Parliament being the House of Commons, the Senate, and the monarch, and not the people. Nowhere in our Constitution does it refer to the people at all. Not like the United States Declaration of Independence, we, the people. Or in Ecuador, I looked it up today, in Ecuador, their Constitution of 2008. We, women and men, the sovereign people of Ecuador, is how it starts its constitution. It identifies that they are sovereign. Unlike in Canada, we are not sovereign people. We are not. It is the parliament. We elect our elite, and they rule us. This is a fundamental flaw that cannot be corrected without constitutional reform, which is highly unlikely, because the culture is not there. And that brings up another point. Canadian culture comes from a basis of altruism, self-sacrifice for the collective, for others. Who decides what's best for others? The parliament, the people we elect to that office to decide what is best for everybody, the individual bedamned. So yes, we are culturally unfixable, at least not in a lifetime, and institutionally unfixable without some sort of revolution, hopefully a peaceful one.
So is it fixable? It's sort of already starting to be. But like a drowning man waiting for Pam Anderson to bear him back to the beach for mouth-to-muff resuscitation, it never seems quite quick enough, does it? But it can't be fixed everywhere. But if you think the solution to statism is statism squared, you are in for the nastiest surprise since British cuisine.
I'm 42 years old, and I think it might be unfixable. Geez, I don't even know if I want to try to fix it anymore. Maybe it's time to make a little bread, build a wall, take care of my loved ones, do a little charitable work to keep my karma level, and stay out of the crosshairs of the scope, because it is a fucking madhouse out there. You ever see the look on anybody's face who's over 80 years old? They give you that good fucking luck look.
You're listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And our conversation with Mark Vandermass on comparisons between life in Canada and life in Ecuador continues.
Two things came to my mind when I was preparing for my discussion with you, Mark, and that is that I see two parallels, two things popped up, two movies, actually. One is Peter Pan and the other was Pollyanna. I think both are Disney movies, even though Pollyanna and Peter Pan were both books before. Pollyanna, from a 1913 book by Eleanor Porter. She was an orphaned girl who was taken in by her aunt Polly, who only did so out of a sense of duty and really didn't want to take care of her. So she put her in the attic. Pollyanna had what she called the glad game. Every time that something bad happened, she played the glad game and had to find something good about it. So what did she say? What a beautiful view from the attic, this high window. So that was the glad game. People around her saying, we hate Sundays. Oh, we got to listen to this sermon from this preacher and it just really gets us down. I really hate Sundays. Pollyanna, play your glad game. What can you find a good about Sundays? And so she thought for a bit. Now, this is in the movie. She thought for a bit and she says, it's six more days till next Sunday. So, this is the way I thought about Canada. Every time something bad happened, and it happened every time the parliament was in session, I tried to think, oh, well, the Rockies, aren't they marvelous? The prairies, look at those fields of grain. Don't we have such a wonderful history? Didn't we give the Kaiser a good beating back in 1918? Boy, that's something to be proud of. How are the Habs doing? Great, we invented hockey, greatest sport on earth. So this is the Pollyanna moment. I'm deflected from the tyranny that's happening directly under my feet by playing this glad game of Pollyanna. And I think everybody else here does it too. They don't want to see what's over here. They're focused on the bread and circuses of our country. And the other movie was Peter Pan, Neverland, because the way our government, our parliament, treats us as citizens, as individuals, as like children, we are prohibited from growing up, stopped from being responsible, self-reliant. We cannot grow up, which was Neverland. The lost boys were there and they remained children. What do we have? You know, we have a Neverland here where you have Trudeau. He's the Tinkerbell going around spreading his pixie dust on everybody. In some sort of magical wonderland where all of us children have to, you know, be children forever and can't, there's no escape. You've escaped Neverland.
What you're saying is true, and I think that people do a lot of this, okay, but very few people take action. I used to think before COVID, I used to believe, because I, as I told you, I spent many, many years working with Jewish people, including this Holocaust survivor who was on a train to Auschwitz at age 5, still alive, by the way. So I knew how fast a supposedly civilized society can go off the rails. And it was really frightening for us to watch that. And the idea, though, I mean, this was supposed to be our last home. We were going to buy a motorcycle and a sidecar right around Eastern Canada and stuff. But in the end, nothing matters more than freedom and the people you love. That really is what it comes down to. And a lot of people live with hopium. They think that the adults are going to look after everything. And then you realize the kids are in charge and not the bright ones. Okay. As somebody once said, I don't know if it was William F. Buckley, I'd rather be governed by the first 100 people in the phone book than what the hell we have now. And that is so true. And so Canada's done. It's not coming back. You're not fixing it. There's no political solution. There's no legal solution because you are 100% right. It just drives me crazy. And I'll have people, well, you know, we got to have a constitutional convention and we got to amend the charter. Are you on drugs? The people who you would need to amend the charter are the same criminals who committed the crimes against you during COVID and throughout all of this. And you think you're going to get those people to amend the charter, maybe in 50 years from now, okay? But no, you're in dreamland when you're talking to me about stuff like that, you know? Or we all got to unite. When is Canada going to wake up? The sheep aren't waking up. That's why they're sheep. And they will go walk into the slaughterhouse. And even when the knife is going across their throat, it will not occur to them that they made a mistake. People like to talk and they like to put the onus on other people, the groups, the waves of people in the country who are going to rise up. And no, the onus is on you to take individual action to do the best to protect you and your family. Take that action, okay? If the other stuff works out, then yippee, like we're looking at, we watch Alberta, we check real estate in Alberta every day, and we got a couple of little towns there that we kind of like, right? You know, they always look good on online. And we look at the listings, okay? And we talk about them, and I show Debbie the listings. But I ain't going there until it's clear that the communists didn't defeat the referendum and that the bloody country, and you're getting it on the right track. And right now, there's nobody other than Bruce Pardee talking about the dangers of that Alberta Prosperity Project's plan to enshrine Aboriginal, you know, blood rights in the Constitution. Well, I'm sorry. We've already disrupted our entire life and gave away everything we own to get out of the country to a place of safety where we can enjoy our life. I ain't going back until I'm sure that you guys got this thing right. I mean, yes, I could go back and yeah, and I'll fight for Alberta independence. Okay. Mark and Debbie not being there is not going to affect your fight for independence. So spare me that nonsense. But we all have the messages, we all have to take responsibility.
Can you tell us again about some of the other benefits that you've noticed in Ecuador? Particularly, I think our listeners will be interested in healthcare. Canada, you know, has the best healthcare system in the world, right? It's probably the worst. But tell us about Ecuador and your personal and friends' experiences with it.
I've got an article online at Substack. It's Mark Vandermass, VanderMaas. Substack.com. And I wrote an article that I keep updated. It's called Ecuador 101 and Other Options for Canadian Refugees. But I have a list of the good, the bad, and the ugly of Ecuador. And I tell you, the good is the list is like this long. Like, it's amazing. And our only criteria for choosing a country, I kid you not, can we get in without being jabbed? And number two, can we apply for residency without having to go back to Canada? And that was; those were the only two requirements. And so we came to Ecuador and we thought, you know, it's a 5 out of 10, it'll be good. We get to Cuenca and it's like a 9 and a 9.5 out of 10. It is awesome here. And for many reasons. First of all, the weather. It's like early Canadian summer all year round here. That no mosquitoes, no humidity. Best water in Latin America, I believe it is. Safest city in South America, it turns out. Many advantages. And the healthcare, which is what you want to know about. Our experience with healthcare is waiting 2 years to get a nurse practitioner in Hillsboro.
New Brunswick.
And, yeah. And he was a nice guy. Up till then, we were using walk-in clinics, and you got, you know, 10 minutes with a doctor who is pushing pills on you right away. And so before we left, we went to see our doctor, commissar doctor, and he said to me, he knew that I'd had a heart attack, that I was nearsighted, I had astigmatism, and he said, well, they still recommend the vaccine for it, because he refused to give me an exemption. And it was at that point I realized that we don't have a medical system, we have a commissar political health system. And I asked him, I said, are you telling me that in order to get my constitutional rights back, you want me to risk another heart attack or death? Is that what you're telling me? Shrugs his shoulder at me. Well, he's got no answer for that. So that's the Canadian healthcare system. Terrified of it. So we come down here. We keep hearing about a doctor. There's this Dr. Maite. She's a Belgian woman, speaks 4 languages. Everywhere we go, oh, yeah, Dr. Maite, that's who you want. And the guy who recommended her said, told us he came to Cuenca on 26 meds in a wheelchair. Today he's on 3 meds and he walks because of this doctor. It took us, she apologized to us because it took 48 hours to get our first appointment with her. Apologized. Okay. So we have not had any contact, with, believe it or not, other than one visit with our doctor since we've been here in 4 years. But we're within walking distance of 3 world-class private hospitals. And there's another one called Hospital Del Rito, a little farther away from us. And so here's a true story. We had this Nova Scotia couple that would come down here for a couple of months at a time. And they'd come down 3 times while we were here. And they had no doctor at home. Can't get a doctor. So they come down here and they need some, he's got some back issues. He's got some respiratory issues and they got a month and a half left. And they said, well, let's, you know, Mark, maybe we'll contact your doctor if you give us her name. So they contacted our doctor. She apologized to them too for making them wait. I think it was 72 hours, not even that. So they went to see her. They come back to where we live, knock on our door, and they got this dumbfounded looks on their, like this. I don't believe it. Dr. Maite referred them to an orthopedic specialist. They called the orthopedic specialist on his cell phone, and he said, you know what? I have a cancellation. Why don't you come in today? And so they went in that day. Well, they were just going to go see him after they left us again at 4 o'clock. And the long story short is, within 1 week, one and a half weeks, they saw our doctor twice, saw 2 different specialists twice, got an MRI, blood work, x-rays, and a diagnosis they could never get in Canada. Cost them around $500. And so, like, our friend Kelly was complaining, you know, she was kind of almost miffed. It took 2 days to get an appointment with her doctor. You know, in Canada, you're lucky to have a doctor. And so it's kind of funny, but that's how good the system is. And so what people do here is we have a catastrophic insurance policy. We pay the first $5,000 of a claim, and we're covered up to $500,000, you know, if something real serious happened. And that policy costs us $230 a month USD. So totally different system. So we also have a public system, which costs about $100 a month for a couple. And that system's kind of like Canada's, okay? You may get good health care. You may not get good health care. You may get in right away. You may not get in right away. Very much like Canada's system, $100 USD.
I just want to contrast, just to give you an idea here, as to Canada versus a good example, Florida. There is an epidemic. The epidemic in Canada is Canadian officials and those in positions of authority who serve to protect your God-given rights, instead stripping the citizens of God-given rights, telling people not to fight back against home invaders or violent criminals.
As it stands, we know the best defense for most people is to comply, as you've just heard, a number of safety recommendations.
That's not defense.
Will allow for those that are victimizing members in the community to leave and not harm anyone.
Mm. Everyone hear about the story in Lindsay? So this criminal that's wanted by the police breaks into this guy's house. This guy gives him a beating, and this guy gets charged.
At 3 a.m.
And the other guy gets charged. But, like, something is broken.
The possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs at your front door. Because they're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else. A lot of them that they're arresting have guns on them, and they're not toy guns, they're real guns. They're loaded.
If we are going to rely on our community members to take matters into their own hands to solve this problem, we have all failed our community.
It's best to just let him finish.
If people take it into their own hands, you failed the community? Let's contrast that with Florida sheriffs. So here are Florida sheriffs encouraging homeowners to do the right thing. And I do mean the right thing. In defending themselves from home invaders.
The people of Polk County like guns. They have guns. I encourage them to own guns. And if you try to break into their homes to steal, to set fires, I'm highly recommending they blow you back out of the house with their gun.
Somebody breaks in your house.
Love that guy.
You're welcome to shoot them in Santa Rosa County. We prefer that you do, actually. We have a gun safety class we put on every other Saturday. And if you take that, you'll shoot a lot better, and hopefully you'll save the taxpayers money.
I praise
Amen.
This husband for doing what he needed to do to protect his home and protect his family. And if you're going to be that brazen to come into my home, once again, you should expect that you're going to be shot.
There's a magazine called International Living. So they focus on where are the great places for expats. Are you ready to leave your high-priced country? Where do you want to go? And Cuenca always seems to come up at the top of the list. You know, they all seem to like Cuenca. You know, it's just a really special place. And it's got the old Spanish architecture.
Yeah, okay, now you're getting into the Pollyanna, Mark, right? This is the Pollyanna. It can't all be all roses, even though you gave it a 9.5 out of 10 in Cuenca. Because if people are going to be looking up Ecuador, they're going to find that, well, first of all, it's an older country than Canada. 1822, they gained independence.
Yep.
But they had some very tough growing pains, a lot of corruption, which exists to this day. Like in Canada, Canada's corrupt, no doubt about it. SNC-Lavalin. So there's corruption, there's organized crime, the likes of which, now we have it here too, but it's the likes of which we have never seen. And I'm sure that there are other detractors for Ecuador, but on average, on the whole, you might say it is a far better place to live than Canada, anywhere in Canada.
In my good, bad, and the ugly list, the bad, the real ugly stuff is mainly on the coast, because that's where the drug smuggling routes go. There's some severe violence there. You know, when you think about it, so first of all, so yes, there are some bad things about Ecuador, but the difference is that the government knows who the bad guys are. And the government wants to stop the bad guys.
Aren't they under state of emergency right now for the last year or so?
I'm not sure if that's still going. It did not apply to our province. Cuenca has the lowest crime rate in South America. And so it was not under the emergency decree. But what I'm saying is that in Ecuador, the government knows the difference between the good people and the bad people. And the government focuses its efforts on the bad people instead of the good people. And I said to you before, we don't have to look over our shoulder wondering what the hell the government is going to do to us today. They're just not interested in imposing this ideological woke nonsense and demonizing Christians, for example, or demonizing Jewish people, or it's focused on the bad people. So yes, the number of murders is way outstrips Canada, but at the same time, if you're not involved in criminal activity here, you're probably more likely to get hurt, as I did, tripping over a sidewalk hazard.
Sounds like horrific.
Oh, it's horrible. And I tell people, when first lesson when they get here, new gringos, do not walk and gawk. The moment you're watching your phone or you're looking at a store is when you're going to trip over a hazard. So, yeah, you have some issues. But so far, I'm not saying it can't go way off the rails. Okay. But so far, feel safer here. And, you know, it's weird because when I see people posting on Twitter and X, all these different things that are going on in Canada, and I think that's a problem we don't have. That's a problem we don't have. That's another problem we don't have. And so you have a very homogenous culture here, mostly Catholic, almost all Catholic. We have no Islam here. Canada is structurally a racist country. I mean, not just a little bit racist. I mean, grotesquely racist. Okay, so if you think about section 15.2 of the charter, that is the affirmative action clause that makes it legal for a university to say, yeah, we want everybody except white males to apply. Okay, and it means, and it's getting even more virulent as time goes on and more blatant because they know there's no defense against it. Then you've got the Aboriginal rights stuff that was enshrined in the Constitution, which can't even be overridden by the notwithstanding clause. Then you've got Section 27, which enshrines multicultural. The charter has to be interpreted from a multicultural perspective, which is why Sikhs can carry swords and knives, but whitey can't. And so anybody who thinks that the charter is a solution to anything is in dreamland, man. You ain't fixing that. How would you fix that? And then you got then never mind section one with the massive, you know, Mack truck loophole of, well, you know, these rights all apply unless the government says otherwise, if we have a good reason. Okay. The charter, you know, listen, I like Brian Peckford. I think he probably meant well when he was trying to draft the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I appreciate him speaking out in COVID, but ultimately he and his fellow drafters drafted the most useless, racist constitutional document I think that could ever exist.
I'm afraid you're right. And I brought this point up with Bruce Pardee. I've interviewed Bruce several times.
Oh, good. I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, several times over the years. And we talked about Section 1 of the Constitution, where Mr. Peckford went on the hustings during the Freedom Convoy saying that, look, this is about insurrection. This is about a takeover of the government by force to overthrow the government. This is about war. That's why we put in Section 1. Bruce Pardee says, that's not what it says. And basically it says what you said. You have these rights as long as we say you do in a free and democratic society.
In many respects, The Ecuadorian constitution is way better than the Canadian constitution, if only for the one factor that mattered to us at the time is it's illegal to discriminate based on medical condition. You are required to vote here. If you're a citizen, you must vote here.
Now, see, that's not freedom to me. To me, you don't have the right to vote because the right to something means you have the right not to do it. So you don't have the right to vote there.
Unless you're over 65. If you're over 65, you don't have to vote.
Yes. Okay? And 16-year-olds can vote optionally. 18 to 65 are mandatory.
Yeah. And so, you know what? They want participation. And let me tell you, the commie candidate, the communist witch, who they thought was going to win the presidential election, she lost by 1 million votes. So whatever it is, I mean, we can argue intellectually about whether that's freedom or not. Maybe not. But
let me put it this way. It's a mechanism. To me, freedom and democracy don't necessarily mean voting. That's not what democracy in my mind means. It means that we don't have a monarch. We don't have a family-ruled business, a clique of families who rule over us. In Canada, technically we do. King Charles III is sovereign. But that's not democracy. Democracy is the people rule. And the person at the top could just be a Joe Blow from down the road who made it to the top. It's not a monarchy. So voting is a mechanism. Yeah. And how you work that mechanism is nuanced and is not prescribed, you know, to be for or against freedom as such. That's my own personal point of view on that.
Oh, yeah, and it's a probably a valid take. As permanent residents, we're not required to vote. So it would be our choice that to become a citizen, knowing that one of the requirements, if we weren't over 65, was that we vote. And I think the idea is good citizenship. And, you know, you can argue whether it's good or not.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to ask you if there was anything else that you'd like to add to our discussion.
I don't think so, Robert. We covered a lot of ground. Because my giving back is helping other people get out of Canada. I don't care where you go, but I care about your freedom. And, I don't charge for that. So,
and what's your X handle?
CDN Refugee. CDN Refugee.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate it, Mark. Like I said, it's good to see you again. Undoubtedly, we'll talk again in the future as things progress here in Canada in its steady decline to tyranny, and always compare it to places like Ecuador. So thanks again.
Thank you again for making all this possible for us, and we'll never forget it.
That, of course, was our audio-edited version of Robert's discussion with Mark Vandermass, and you can watch the entire near 90-minute video version by visiting justrightmedia.org online. And whether you've escaped Canada for greener pastures elsewhere, or whether you're still trapped inside the Canadian dystopia, you can always escape all of the madness, at least for an hour or so, by joining us each week as we continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Now, I believe we all understand the situation we have here. We're right in the middle of the nurses and the doctors' strike, so the rest of us hospital employees will have to fill in the best that we can. Now, as the administrator in this hospital, I am familiar with medical terminology, so I'll read the instructions from the book. Now, what do you do?
Oh, I scrub floors.
Well, you'd better wash your hands.
Oh, no, they're clean. They've been in the mop bucket all day.
Now, you sure you can perform the actual operation?
Oh, sure. I know a lot about anatomy from preparing chickens in the kitchen.
Oh, well, that's swell. Ready to start?
Sure, but I just like...
Well, just a minute now. You're not going to start with a pair of scissors.
What would you like?
You get the scalpel. That's the one with the sharp edge. Okay. Good. Now, it says that you... Are you ready?
Okay.
You make the initial incision between the hip bone and the navel about 3 inches long. You got that?
Sure, nothing to it. I just like to ask one thing.
What's that?
Is it before or after I cut off its head?
I don't know.